You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Buckeye Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to Buckeye Talk. I'm Stephen Means. That's Nathan Barrett, and that's Andrew Gillis. And this is your Wednesday Buckeye Talk. On Tuesday, we were back in the Woody for Ohio State's sixth practice of the spring, and we talked with Keenan Bailey, the tight ends coach. We talked with defensive line coach Larry Johnson, and we were supposed to talk with running backs coach Tony Alford, but he decided he didn't want to live in Columbus anymore. He'd rather live in Ann Arbor. So that's one name we had to cross off of the list. So not the biggest list of people to talk to, Nathan and Andrew, but obviously we're supposed to get a bigger list of players for Thursday. But I do think how this kind of shaped out is it's an interesting two groups that we got to talk to, right? And it felt like the vibes in which they talked about the position group were very, very different. With Larry Johnson, it's like, hey, do you have depth? And he's like, yeah, I've got a lot of depth. While with Keenan Bailey, it's like, hey, do you have a starter and depth? And he's like, well, we'll see. That's the kind of vibe I got from these two assistant coaches, the way they were talking. Nathan, is that the kind of vibe you were getting from Keenan Bailey and Larry Johnson about the way they talked about their position groups?
Well, I mean, on one side, you have a position group that 80% of the NFL-ready players decided to come back. And on the other side, 100% of the NFL-ready players left. So that's how it should be right now. They are in different places. One is in a more transitional place, probably, and that's not a knock against someone like G. Scott, who's obviously the holdover here, and it's not a knock against where Jelani Thurman is at this point, but you have a group with a transfer coming in and Wilkes Merrick, and like, where does all of that shake out? How does that look in games this fall? What does it even look like in games, maybe especially this year, depending on what Ryan Day and Chip Kelly want to do? Like, there's a lot of unknowns there. Whereas on the defensive side of the ball, this is just a continuation or the foundation in some ways of the similarities, like the stability that they are carrying over from last year to this year. It is exemplified with what this defensive line group is.
So Andrew, let's start on the defensive side with the defensive line. Obviously last year, JT Tuimoloau led all defensive linemen with snaps. He had 677. Tyleek Williams was second. And first amongst interior guys, he had 645. And then Jack Sawyer, 610. Those are the three guys who played at least 600 snaps last season. And then obviously Michael Hall Jr., 413. Maybe would have played more if it not were for some injuries. And then Ty Hamilton, 350. Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry played 174, 165. As you can see, it's a significant drop-off. And there were even some games earlier in the year, like the Notre Dame game, where we didn't see any of the edge rushers other than Jack and JT for that entire game. In fact, I have just to point out some of these numbers here, starting with the edge rushers. If you add up Kenyatta Jackson, Caden Curry, Mitchell Melton, Amari Abor, who of course is no longer here, and Joshua Mickens' total snaps last year, it's 432. So it's still almost 200 less than either Jack Sawyer or JT Tuimoloau played this past year. But the way Larry Johnson was talking, it seems like they've got that depth. And given the way the schedule is going to work out with potentially 17 games, guys look ready to be used a little bit more often, and maybe that won't be that big of a disparity throughout the year next year.
Well, it can't be.
You know, it's not, hey, can Ohio State have the depth to do this? It's, no, Ohio State, whether or not they have the depth to do this, you can't play Jack Sawyer and JT Tumaloa 65 snaps every game. Like, it's just not going to work. Because by the end of the season, they're going to be worn down if you are just constantly throwing them into the fire like that. So, you know, I think the depth building is huge here, right? And you know, that was what Larry Johnson said today, where it was, well, we've never seen this before, so ask me during the season. You know, somebody asked him about, you know, the 17-game season and kind of the depth that he's building, and you need to have depth. This isn't a, oh, well, this is a nice thing to have. You know, you're not playing 12 games and then a conference championship game maybe, and then you have a month off and then you play two more games. Like, that's not the way that this is going to work anymore. It's going to be an NFL schedule. That's what you're basically playing. And in the NFL, you had better be able to rotate some of those guys in a little bit. I mean, guys are going to get hurt. You have to have the ability to play different players. And yeah, depth is now a necessity. And when you look at guys like Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry, you can't be scared of putting them in a game that's 17-7 in the second quarter, right? Like, you can't be afraid of saying, you know what, this game's not out of reach yet, but we can put those guys in. Because it's one thing to say, of course they're going to take Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry out when it's 56-0 in the middle of the fourth quarter against Akron, right? Those guys are going to already have, like, couple drinks on the sideline. Like, they could do that if they wanted to. It'd be fine. But the situations that are really going to matter are, can you trust Kenyatta Jackson to play a three-down role against Iowa in the second quarter? You know, can you trust a Caden McDonald or a Jason Moore to play a series or two against Penn State? Those are going to be the situations that matter. So yeah, I mean, building up depth is key, and you have to make those numbers a little bit more even. You have to bring those down to earth, because you might be playing a handful of more games than you did at any other point in your history.
So yes, he was asked about the 17 game season. Well, 17 game is like worst case scenario, because that means you didn't win the Big Ten. You don't have a first round bye. If you win the Big Ten, and you played in the Big Ten Championship game, that's 16 games, which is only one more game than they would have played last year when they weren't taking this approach at all. And it's 16 games over more weeks, because there are two idle weeks this year, two bye weeks built into the regular season schedule. So, yes, they're talking about it in terms of the extra stamina that you'll need, or maybe the other way of saying it is the extra wear and tear that will be there and needing to distribute reps. But the most important thing, from the depth standpoint, I mean, Larry Johnson is saying these guys need to be ready to play 25-35 snaps. He's not saying they are ready, and he's not saying that they're going to play that regardless of whether they're ready. So that's why I think this is a big spring for some of these guys, especially these interior guys, to step up. Like, we've seen some flashes for some of those guys. It's really more about, are they going to make the jump and step up and be worthy of 25-35 snaps per game? That is obviously the end goal. I think that remains to be seen whether they are all at that level. But I think it's also, there are indications that they're going to have multiple guys who can get to that level. But I just want to make sure that's how I see it anyway. That's how I hear it when I talk to these guys. It's not that, because I think in some ways, like I just said, that if everything goes according to plan for Ohio State this year, it's only one more game. That's not a backbreaking amount of extra work, and it's not and not that different of a season unfolding than what they had last year with essentially the same number of guys. Actually, you would say they probably have, in theory, they'll have more depth this year, because they didn't lose a lot, Mike Hall and Jerron Cage, I guess, but they didn't lose a ton up front. They should be even deeper just naturally this year. But I think Larry Johnson also did acknowledge that today, which was, and it might have been the question you asked, right, Stephen? And I can't remember who asked it, but that this wasn't, part of this was guys weren't ready to play more snaps last year.
Yeah.
So the question I was asking about Jackson and Curry was sort of in a different angle, though, which was the first 2 years are on us, the third year is on them, meaning that the coaches are accountable for these first 2 years, getting them ready, and then the third year is when players are supposed to go. When I got Larry Johnson even off to the side at the end, because I'm like, this has to be a weird line for you to walk a little bit, because I'm sure in recruiting, you were telling people like Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry, hey, by the time your third year comes around, you know, there's a good chance JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer are gone, and now you guys are the ones taking over, and you can, it's your time to cook. And at the same time, you can't go too far down that road because you don't know what the future's going to look like. And he said, yeah. And it wasn't that there was a, I don't think he felt there was a danger in those guys transferring, but he brought up on his own, hey, those guys could have gone in the portal. They could have left. And so again, that's why I pulled him off the side to be like, so are you saying, like, did you have to like talk them out of the portal? And he said, no, but that you almost had to like preemptively have that conversation. And you're hearing from parents, you're hearing from other people. You have to have some conversations that just explain to people the lay of the land a little bit, and that where there can still be a big role. And I'm intrigued to see how this plays out, as I think everyone is, because on the one hand, it's, you would think that this is a year for JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer to build off of what they did last year. And that involved them playing a lot last year. But if these two guys are ready by naturally by their third year, and it's tough because they haven't had a lot of game reps. Really. I mean, we talked about seeing Caden Curry do some things, and Kenyon Jackson's mixed in there too. Caden especially got some like garbage time as a true freshman, but they haven't played a lot of game snaps. They haven't played as many game snaps as either Tuimoloau or Sawyer did at this stage of their career. Have not played nearly as many snaps as like even Zach Harrison played at this stage of his career. Maybe even Tyreek Smith, despite all the injuries that Tyreek Smith had at this stage of his career. So they're a little bit behind in experience. And I think this is a big spring for them to, and Larry Johnson, in talking about this depth that he's building, said that these younger guys are repping a lot with the ones. And it's a indication, I think, both that they are advancing, but also that they have to speed this up a little bit. They have to show these guys the best that they can in practice to get them to raise their level to be better by the time September rolls around.
And we knew this was going to happen, right? When you got this experience of a team, that there were just going to be a, I mean, we could make the list right now of guys who probably aren't going to do that much this spring because they don't have to, right? Travion Henderson, JT Tuimoloau, Jack Sawyer, Emeka Buka, Denzel Burke, yeah. Jordan Hancock. We can keep going on this list here. It's just Larry Johnson was the first one who went there with us and saying that, I mean, listen, Jack and JT don't have to do a bunch, which is why every time we're in there, you're always seeing at least one of those guys maybe getting in a little bit of extra work after practice, because they probably did not do much during practice. Because to your point, Nathan, you are seeing it is Kenyatta Jackson, it is Caden Curry getting more work with the ones, because they have to speed this up a little bit. I read it the way you read it, but I only read it that way with the tackles. I think the way he was talking about it with Kenyatta and Caden, it's that they are ready. And maybe last year they weren't as ready, and this year the edge guys especially are ready with, I think the order he said it in was Caden Curry, Kenyatta Jackson, and then Mitchell Melton. And then obviously we can have a conversation about education and whether or not he can throw himself into this mix here. But it does seem like if they don't have to play Jack and JT for all 60-plus snaps against Oregon, they don't have to, whether they do or not, they can, but they don't have to, because they maybe feel a little bit more comfortable about where Caden Curry and where Kenyatta Jackson are at this point in their career. While with the interior guys, Andrew, while he listed off a bunch of guys, he listed off, you know, Jason Moore and Caden McDonald. We've had intrigue about Kiro Kanu this entire time and what's going on with Taiwan Malone. It does seem like more of a, okay, you got 6 months to really build a level of depth here that Larry Johnson can go from, I think we have the depth, to being comfortable with actually putting that depth out there and not just feeling like Tyleek Williams and Ty Hamilton are your only answers on the interior.
Yeah, I think they'll get there on the defensive interior. I really do. I think there's just too many names with too many names with too much talent, right? I mean, you've got Hamilton and you've got Williams right up the middle. I mean, those are your two. And then you talk about, I mean, Hiro Kanu played really well, I thought, last year. You know, Steven brought this up after practice today. You know, we looked at Jason Moore in fall camp last year, and we kind of looked at each other like, I mean, this was like the first practice I ever saw of Ohio State. And we kind of looked at each other and we were like, well, that's what elite defensive tackles look like. Like, that's what NFL defensive tackles look like. Go ahead.
Larry Johnson called him today the ideal three tech in this defense, 6'5", 295 pounds. So Larry Johnson agrees with the assessment Andrew and I made all those months ago.
Yeah, so that is us telling you, the dear Buckeye Talk listeners, that Stephen Means and I know exactly as much as Larry Johnson does.
Bingo.
Don't read anything into that. you have Hamilton and you have Williams up the middle. But then you have Cade McDonald, who he was the first person, like somebody asked him, who's your third interior guy? Cade McDonald was the first name off his lips. Then it was Jason Moore. Then he mentioned Hiro Kanu. And then you have Will Smith Jr. in there. And then you have Tywan Malone. Like, you've got five guys, right? I'm not going to count Eric Mensah. I mean, that's a project that's kind of too far down the line. But it feels like everyone in that room you could make a case for. And the building of that depth, I feel pretty solid about where Ohio State's at, considering it's March 26th. They're not going to play a game for over 5 months at this point. I think that with the summer, with the rest of spring practice, with a fall camp, I think that unit, name independent, is probably built to handle that. I think you can figure out a 1-2 rotation where you have like, and by 1-2, I mean a pair. So you can figure out your starting pair. You can figure out your 3-4, your next pair. You could probably go into 5-6 at that point and feel pretty solid about where you're at there too. So, you know, I think that they have enough names there where I think the depth will kind of sort itself out.
Nathan, I wanted to touch on something that you hinted at there with the portal talk that Larry Johnson was getting into there. And he said something else that I thought was interesting. These aren't the exact words, but he said something along the lines of he spent more time recruiting his own room than maybe doing the typical high school football recruiting, which that has nothing to do with why they only ended up with two defensive linemen in this class at all. But it is a different conversation than maybe Larry Johnson has gotten used to having with some players, especially with Kenyatta Jackson, Caden Curry, as you mentioned. When they were getting recruited, they're probably not expecting Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau to be here in 2024. Hey, JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer are probably not expecting this to be here in 2024. But just that conversation you were having with him on the side, but then also the way he was talking with it when he was sitting with everybody, of it is a different – it's Larry Johnson's the oldest guy on his coaching staff. He's been coaching for a long time, but he seems to have come around to the reality and the adaptation that can sometimes come with you're having to re-recruit your own room. And maybe he had to do it a little bit more than normal simply because of how some developments went. He had some guys in a good way come back and maybe throw off the way that maybe they were planning for this defensive line room down the line, maybe 3 or 4 years from now.
Yeah. And it wasn't either or, because it's the timelines don't play off of each other. You know, signing day is when it is, and then then the NFL decisions come, and it's sort of three layers of it. It's the, you know, he had the high school recruiting, kind of the conventional high school recruiting, which was unconventional this year for him. We can get into Edric Houston in a minute. Yeah. And then, because today was the first day he got to talk about that publicly. And then secondly, then you've got to line up things with JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer. And there was two kind of separate timelines there, because everybody's making their own decision, even if they are all sort of fused together. And certainly, I think the idea, if you go back to 2021 and listen to some old Buckeye talks, and I bet we weren't talking about both of these guys still being part of the 2024 defense. It was always the assumption. I mean, these are it's not just like the best defensive ends in a particular class. It's like 5-star top 10 defensive ends coming in. Those guys tend to move. Those guys tend to go on the fast track. Nick Bosa was on the fast track. Chase Young was on the fast track. It's an exception when they're not. And now they are both the exception to that rule now. And at the same time, then when you get that lined up, then you also are having to have these discussions with Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry. And they call it recruiting the room or re-recruiting the room. I think in that case, though, sometimes that's a little bit dramatic, because I think there are times when, and listen, Kenyatta Jackson and Caden Curry are two separate conversations too, because one guy is, you know, he's Indiana, he's closer. Kenyatta Jackson, different situation, and maybe he would have looked at things differently. I don't know. We haven't had a chance to talk to him. Hopefully maybe later this week we can. But Sometimes it's just a matter of having conversations. It's not like actively re-recruiting and having to promise things and having to line up big NIL things. Sometimes it's just a matter of having heart-to-heart to making sure everybody's on the same page. And that's that was the concept I got from him, especially as related to Jackson and Curry. It was more just about, you know, talking through things, having adult conversations about where things stand. And the good news in the case of both of those guys is that there really is still a role to be played, especially if they're going to talk about giving 25 to 35 snaps to guys. And you may be right. That may have been more about the interior guys and he was talking about those specific numbers. But you can also see a situation here where you can utilize Kenyatta Jackson. Maybe he is not at the level of JT Tumalo and Jack Sawyer as an all-around defensive end. But if the pass rush skills are there and he can just come in and almost specialize and really emphasize pass rush skills for however many snaps that he is in some of these games, it can still have a really great impact because you're going in as a guy, a third-year major prospect guy. You're already going to have a talent advantage on some of the guys that you're going up against in the Big Ten, and now you're also going to have a stamina advantage that you're going to go in with some guys who maybe have been beaten on already for a half, for three quarters, and you go in and you can really light them up in theory. So I think we're all intrigued by what this could look like as they start rotating down to that second level of guys, because I think you could have a situation where this is a year where both of those guys can build a lot of buzz and set themselves up for something special in a fourth year by coming in and really maximizing their production in this third year, which by Ohio State's plan, keeping everybody healthy, would be a sort of secondary role for both those guys.
So, Andrew, one person we haven't talked about yet on this pod was five-star freshman Edric Houston, who, of course, the only five-star defensive lineman in this class, one of two defensive linemen along with Eric Mensah, who had committed to Ohio State before the season started, and it felt like, at least the way Larry Johnson even talked about it, it felt like that was pretty locked in as we headed into signing day, but it felt like the last 2 weeks heading into signing day, that conversation that seems to creep up every signing day over the last 4 or 5 years here with Larry Johnson of, is he going to retire? Is he going to keep coaching, came up once again, and there were rumors, there were people who out there who thought maybe Edric Houston would be flipping to Alabama on signing day. That obviously didn't happen. And we kind of got to see that play out in real time with Ryan Day leaving the room on signing day to go talk with Edric Houston and coming back into the room, not being able to talk about him until the very end of the signing day when it was official that he'd actually signed his paperwork. But this is the first time we've talked to Larry Johnson since a lot of that played out. And Larry's been doing this for a long time, so he's seen some crazy recruitments over the years. Nathan, you remember the JT Tuimoloau recruitment and how that literally went not just down to the buzzer. It went into like double overtime because he didn't commit until 3 weeks before he had to report for fall camp. But Andrew, what did Larry Johnson have to say about the Edric Houston recruitment and how that played out? And I guess the latest on the rumors and thoughts that maybe he might be done here in the near future.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you look at, you look at the recruitment as a whole, right? And it was a very unique recruitment. I mean, going back to the beginning of it, because Ohio State gets this defensive end, this five-star defensive end out of Buford, Georgia, great program. And you, like you said at the top, you felt great about where Ohio State was at. And then just a couple of days before signing day, those whispers start to emerge because this was back in a magical land where Nick Saban was still the coach of a college football team. And as Steven and I discussed many times on the recruiting pods that we do here, we talked about this and like, you know what? Sometimes guys just want to play for Nick Saban. And sometimes guys just want to go play for Nick Saban. And, you know, you hear all the rumors that Ohio State is recruiting, or excuse me, teams are recruiting against Ohio State in this regard, but they're telling you that Larry Johnson's going to retire or that he's only got a year left. And it really kind of felt dicey. And I remember on signing day, on the morning of signing day, we were getting ready to go in, and there were a couple crystal balls floating out there from some national sites that had him flipping to Alabama. And Larry Johnson said today, it was quiet. It was dark on his end. They didn't get in touch with him. They weren't hearing from him. They didn't know really what was going on. So I think I mean, it was a really unique recruitment. He said that it wasn't anything like he's had before. You know, he said that Edric Houston showed up on the first day and was like, you know, oh, this is, I love it here. You know, this is where my heart is. And it's fun to say now, and I think it's a good story now, but it certainly was not that way all the way through. So yeah, it was a very unique recruitment. And to me, like when you talk about this recruitment, it doesn't really seem to me that I just think it's a good example that, you know, Larry Johnson can still swing these guys and Larry Johnson can still pull in these players, because the number one thing that you can point to is, hey, look, Larry Johnson's 72 years old and he did get this five-star player to come from the South and play for Ohio State. And the school that he was coaching against, the school that he was recruiting against, their head coach retired. Like one, like probably the biggest reason that Edric Houston was considering Alabama, and like there's nothing wrong with this, is that they had the best college football coach of all time. That's okay that the players want to play for that dude. And I just think it kind of signifies, like, you know what? Like, you can still win these battles and you can still kind of compete with the heavyweights. And then especially you have another example to point to where it's, hey, look, everybody's telling me that I'm going to retire and go look at that dude. And I think that kind of to me was what that recruitment signified. So, yeah, very, very unique recruitment. I mean, we all talk about Ryan Day, like getting up in the middle of the recruitment or the middle of his press conference to go take a phone call that he couldn't say was from Buford, Georgia just yet. Like it got wild and it got weird. And I mean, Edric Houston, he seems like a really good football player. He seems like he's going to be a guy here, maybe starting in like 2025. But for what this, I think, means for Larry Johnson and for Edric Houston, I think, it's pretty big, because it kind of proves that Larry Johnson can still play with the heavyweights a little bit.
Nathan, I don't think this came up today, but Larry did sign a 2-year extension this offseason. Ryan Day talked about Larry at length during an earlier offseason press conference when he got him about the stability that Larry's bringing there and not being necessarily fearful that he was going to leave here. But from this, do you think the 2-year extension part of this, especially for Larry Johnson, because this has continued to be an issue, does that kind of put some of that at ease if you're a recruit and you're maybe wondering that question, that at least for the next 2 years, I know Larry Johnson is going to be
there? I suppose, yeah. I mean, you know, he can at least say, you know, instead of saying, well, we're working on my contract for next year, you can always say, I have a contract for next year.
Yeah.
So that's better. And we thought that there was a chance in the offseason that they were going to, instead of promoting James Laurinaitis, bring in another defensive line coach to sort of act as the redundancy there, right? Let the, you know, have them both sort of recruiting that group, and then knowing then, you know, both those guys. But guess what? I mean, that sounds like a great plan until somebody decides they want to make that guy an even higher paid defensive line coach than you will and steals him away. I mean, there's no guarantees. And I think that's why, if you're smart about this as an athlete, you're, as much as you want to develop your relationship with these guys, make it about more than that. And that's, they all say that at the end of the day. We've all obviously seen cases where that's not the case, whether that's Clark Phillips with Jeff Hafley, whether that's things that have worked in Ohio State's favor over the years. So it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to get that second year, to have a 2-year contract on the books. Ohio State can then, after this coming season, if Larry's going to stay around for another year, you can tack another year on the back end of that. From, you know, his salary from the time that I've been here, I'd have to go back and look. It hasn't fluctuated significantly. He's been past $1 million for most of that, but it's not like he's getting big chunks added on to that. Like, his duties haven't significantly shifted. So he's kind of locked in at what he's making. That's in the bottom line of what they're paying the staff right now, kind of baked in. So that's not a big factor. It's just about, you know, what are they comfortable putting on the books? And I think what'll be maybe a telltale sign, and I'd have to go back in and look at the contracts, because usually there's a, well, if the coach leaves early, maybe they owe a buyout or whatever, but that doesn't usually apply to retirements, obviously. So even those things won't give us a big hint as to what's going on here. I think it's just, when Larry's ready to go, he'll obviously go, but he doesn't ever come around to us and talk like somebody who's got one foot out the door. Like, he sounds like he is still pretty invigorated by this. that the competitiveness is still there. He was talking today about when I was asking questions about Tuimoloau and Sawyer and, like, you know, trying to maximize the final year that you now have with them. And he was going on this long thing about, it was either in response to my question or one that Bill Rabinowitz asked, because they were similar. But he was talking about, you know, how he in the offseason goes out and, like, how can I be a better coach? And I go back and I rewatch every play that was played, and I think, how could I do that better? And then we figure some things out, and then we go work the crap out of it or something like that. Like, that's pretty close to a direct quote. And there's still a passion in this guy. There's still a fire in this guy to do this job. And the other thing is, like, now this 2024, if this is the best case scenario for Ohio State and this defensive line is just a behemoth, is that something that he'll see? All right, that's a great way to go out, and it's time to just ride off into the sunset. Especially if they win a national championship, you could bookend your tenure with national championships. Like, he came in 2014, to leave in 2024 and just mic drop, say, came in with a title, left with a title. What are you going to do? Or is it so impressive that he's like, you know what? I mean, I've obviously still got it. I'm getting Edrick Houston. I'm coaching these guys to this performance. I can stick around here and do this a few more years. And frankly, let's be honest, like, as long as he's getting the recruits, you're not going to hear a lot of complaining about whether Larry Johnson's there or not.
And it does seem like they kind of took that intermediate step. Obviously, the extension for Larry Johnson, the two-year extension. He shouted out Brandon Jordan and Lyle and Clark, who are his GAs in that room and helping out with some of that stuff. Yep. Well, it's often who you see the players with. So it's not just Larry Johnson or nothing in that room. There, he does seem to have a team of guys and seems to be embracing that as well. Larry Johnson, one of three prominent people in the Ohio State football program still left from that 2014 national championship season. The other two, Mark Pantone, Mick Marotti. Everybody else, gone, either retired or just, you know, at another school right now. We're going to take a quick break there, and then when we'll come back, we'll flip sides of the ball. We'll talk tight ends, where the optimism doesn't seem to be as high, at least right now, and at least the way that Keenan Bailey was talking about things, and we'll get more into that when we come back here on Buckeye Talk.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Get the text 614-350-3315 as Keenan Bailey and Larry Johnson were talking. We were texting stuff out. When Black Stripe started coming off, we're texting that stuff out as well. Both Caleb Downs and Quinshon Judkins, the first two transfers, this number two and number three people overall to lose their Black Stripes this spring. Obviously, Jeremiah Smith kicked that off last week by being the quickest to ever lose his Black Stripe, which is, it's a big deal because it's a big-time recruit. But as Nathan has also pointed out, it was like one practice ahead of when Carnell Tate lost his. And I think it was one practice ahead of when Justin Fields lost his back in 2019. And so it's not like he's blowing everybody else out of the water. It's just a cool thing to point out when you're trying to find every way in the world to hype up the greatest wide receiver prospect of the last decade. So why not? But that's not who we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk tight ends. Nathan, we did a video on this, and we were even having a discussion about this, about whether the production of what we saw from Cade Stover the last 2 years has to be mirrored in 2024 for this Ohio State offense to be good. I think we all came to the consensus of that being yes, but there does need to be a level of just high level of play there. And I don't think Keenan Bailey, six practices in, is ready to say that he has got a guy like that who can be that for him, even with G. Scott as the only guy on this roster who has played more than 100 snaps at tight end for Ohio State.
You know, Andrew, a couple weeks ago, referenced Moneyball, and we want to be careful how often we do this, but I've sort of been thinking about that same line today.
What baseball, like, movies more?
Like,
I like it, Nathan.
Recreating Cade Stover in the aggregate. Maybe that's what this is about here in these next, this next 6 to 9 months. Now, maybe somebody else steps up. You know, frankly, we weren't sure that Cade Stover was going to do what he did these past 2 years until he did it. You know, 2021, he had made this transition to the tight end room, for most of the year, finished the year in the tight end or in the linebacker room with for the Rose Bowl, people remember. So it, you know, he was mostly in the tight end thing, but they needed help at linebacker late. Jeremy Ruckert was playing the bowl game, so they could afford to put Cade Stover on that side of the ball. But it definitely left open some questions of how good, how productive he could be in 2022 and 23. And then the way that both, I think the way you can tell that it was real was that both C.J. Stroud and Kyle McCord had essentially the same production with him. Like they got about the same thing out of him. And that tells you that it wasn't just one favoring him over the other or something like that. So there were some things there that are like very specific to his skill set that he was able to get, because even other really good tight ends, even other NFL tight ends, Ruckert, Luke Farrell, name some other guys, like they didn't have that sort of production at Ohio State as a receiving tight end. So with the depth of this receiver core, with the fact that you're going to have two running backs who on occasion you probably even want to get on the field together somehow, I think it does reduce how crucial it is to be getting receiving production out of the tight ends. Where I think people should put their, I know everybody wants to see Jelani Thurman just go out and do Antonio Gates things. I know that's what they want to see. I know it. I know you guys want to see him go out and just be a monster. And it would be really cool, I guess, if he did. It would be fun to watch. I just don't know that that's in the cards for 2024. And I think the most critical thing, I mean, that would be fun to watch, but it would not be as fun to watch if you're an Ohio State fan as winning a national championship. And the thing that's most critical for a national championship is just the all-around play of these tight ends, and especially the blocking. And I think that's where Keenan Bailey, who is a fairly reserved guy anyway, like he doesn't come in and just he's measured in the way he talks about things, especially like not trying to overhype guys. I think that's smart, young coach. I don't think you want to get out over your skis on stuff like that. But I think his point is that, you know, Will Kosmarek has a good foundation laid in the MAC, but he is making a transition. You know, G. Scott has done some good things in a backup role, but it's a step up if he's going to try to be the guy in this offense. And we've heard other coaches saying good things about G. Scott and teammates saying good things about G. Scott and how the spring is going for him. Jelani Thurman, kind of a limited role last year. Looked like he was going to get a bigger role in the Cotton Bowl. Things went sideways. I don't know if you guys were watching. Wasn't great, so he didn't get to have as much of a role as maybe they were expecting him to have that night. Just there's still some unknowns here, and I think it's probably in his best interest, being Keenan Bailey's and that group's best interest, to let us talk about it and speculate. That's fine. Don't maybe play that far into it. You've also got some other guys hanging around. Bennett Christian, you got some freshmen coming in, though that's really more like a couple years down the line, really, for that kind of those guys to probably start making an impact. I think it's more just about, can you get a collective blocking effort that you need from this group first and foremost? And then on top of that, because of all these other offensive weapons, I think beyond just keeping them involved, if you get production beyond that as a receiver from the tight ends, that might just be kind of cherry on top.
I thought it was interesting when he brought up Bennett Christian and said, because he couldn't play all last year because of he was suspended for the season for taking an illegal substance, a banned substance, illegal. He didn't break a law. He just broke an NCAA rule. It's a very different thing, as the Supreme Court keeps telling us. But he was with the scout team all last year. And I do wonder if, with Bennett Christian especially, you're going up against Jack and JT a lot when you're on scout team, and Keenan Bailey had brought that up about even this year going up against Jack and JT and what that can do for you. I do wonder if even behind the scenes, Bennett Christian was maybe able to take a step just because all of his snaps were against the ones technically because you're playing on scout team. Andrew, the way there's almost two ways that he could have taken this, right? Because let's bring Brian Hartline into this conversation, who has a similar room. And Emeka Ebuka aside, it's a bunch of unproven guys. There's some guys that you think are going to be pretty good, right? In the wide receiver room, you got Carnell Tate, Brandon Ennis, Jeremiah Smith, maybe Jaden Ballard's ready to take off in year four. Just like in the tight end room, there's some guys that you think are going to be pretty good for you. Jelani Thurman, maybe Will Kosmarek can make that jump. G. Scott continues to make progressions in that situation, but it's nothing proven in either one of those rooms. And Keenan Bailey could have done what Brian Hartline did, and go, nah, I'm not worried about anything. And put boatloads of confidence into what he has coming into his room, but he didn't necessarily do that. In fact, when he was talking about Jelani Thurman at times, he almost said the opposite of first you have to figure out what you're doing there. So in terms of the Jelani Thurman part of this, what just by the way Keenan Bailey was talking on Tuesday, what are you maybe expecting his role for Jelani Thurman to be early in the year? Regardless of what it turns into by the end of the year, what are you expecting to see out of Jelani maybe the first 3 or 4 weeks of the season?
Well, I think early, especially, I mean, for especially this room, because he mentioned this with Will Kaczmarek, too. I mean, this is a guy who's coming in and learning a new offense, learning new schemes. I think when he was talking about Will, he said, know the why of, you know, why things are happening. And he's like, that's the next step. And I think that you could probably make a similar argument for Jelani Thurman, you know, kind of understanding the why and understanding, you know, why things happen. Why are you doing this? What's going on in this particular formation, in this particular set that makes you want to do that? So with Jelani, I think the first couple of weeks are going to be pretty clearly a test run of kind of what the year can look like. Because I've made mention of this a couple of different times. The schedule plays out really nicely for you, you know, in terms of making sure that, you know, you're building up into the season. There's not a Notre Dame to start the year, right? You know, this isn't 2025 when Texas is coming to town early, I think the first game of the year, to kick things off. Like, this is a very much a slow burn to get into the season. Play two MAC schools first, then you get a bye week, then you play Marshall, and then you go to Michigan State at the end of September. So I think for Jelani, it's going to be a test run. It's going to be, how can you handle the different things that we're going to throw at you? Because you can handle Jelani Thurman in a situation where maybe he's a little bit uncomfortable, or maybe he hasn't seen certain looks, or maybe he hasn't played in a game in a certain type of situation. And okay, we're going to play him against Akron. We're going to see how he does run blocking. We're going to test him run blocking. We're going to test him running routes. We're going to test him out wide. We're going to test him in line. We're going to test him when he goes in motion. Like, we're going to test him in all of these different ways. And I think that you can obviously learn a lot over, you know, the next 2 or so weeks until spring practice happens and or ends. You can obviously learn a lot in the next 3 months before fall camp begins. You can obviously learn a lot in the month that fall camp happens. So there's a lot to go into this still. But I think the first couple of weeks of the season for Jelani are going to be big in that it's basically your final exam, right? You know, everything that you're learning right now, I mean, this is like the first semester for him, you know, of kind of the 2024 season. It's, all right, you're probably at like midterms, maybe final exams of the first semester, and you're trying to put everything together. And then over the summer, you got to study, you got to get, you know, the playbook down, you got to get the terminology down, you got to make yourself a physically ready player that can do both things, because you don't want to be, I know Nathan brought up, you know, replacing Cade Silver in the aggregate, but you don't want to be the guy who can only go out for routes. Like, you want to be the guy who can play three downs because you can block. And that's the role that you want to have. So there's a lot that goes into this, but to me, it's going to be a real trial by fire when you get to the first 3, probably 4 games of the year for Jelani Thurman. And I think that's probably fair.
Nathan, when you mix the way Keenan Bailey was talking about this group with just maybe what the expectations in terms of production could be for this group, when you're not really expecting it to be Cade Stover level production, because it probably doesn't have to when you look at all the weapons elsewhere. But still, the way that Keenan Bailey talked about things, scale of 1 to 10, 6 practices in to, you know, 55 before they play a football game. How worried are you about Ohio State's tight ends in 2024, if at all?
No, I don't think I would use the word worried. Like, I came out of last spring worried about the offensive line because I saw the offensive line get the crap blasted out of it for a good portion of the spring. We barely watched anything this spring. Like, we saw 20 minutes each those first couple days, and we're going to hopefully see a pretty extended look at it Saturday for Student Appreciation Day. So people should know we'll be putting up a special Buckeye Talk on Saturday afternoon after we see things, hopefully an extended look. Now, they keep things kind of vanilla that day, but we'll get to see more. Like, for instance, like, we haven't seen a 7-on-7. Nope. Anything. Like, we haven't seen really anything. Like, what they do before games to warm up, we haven't even seen that much. So, you know what I mean? So, like, Keenan Bailey could be sandbagging. I mean, Jelani Thurman could be out there, like, just going pancake, touchdown, just alternating snaps, Kyle like Pitts, for all we know. Like, yeah, he could be out there crushing it. Like, we'll find out. And we haven't heard that. We would have probably heard that by now if that were actually going on. I'm just, again, you got just some new guys and some young guys and some unproven guys. And then someone like G. Scott, who, even though we kind of look at him and are like, well, he's not really unproven, just hasn't had to carry the weight on his own before. But that doesn't mean he can't. That doesn't mean that his best football isn't ahead of him. And frankly, you know, he's on, if you're on a 5-year plan, he's going to be a 5th-year guy. It's a developmental position. He should be more physically and mentally in place to play this position than he ever has been. And you would, we've seen growth from him each year. I would say even these last 2 years and into last year, I thought you saw real growth from him as to what he does on a football field to help Ohio State win. So the idea that he could take another step, that he could emerge and take some of those receiving skills that he built throughout the course of his life and now fuse it with what he's done the last 3-4 years as a tight end and be a newer version of himself, I think that's very much on the table. It's just have to see it. So, and all of those things, regardless of what's true about that, tight end is also the, as much as I think it's important to the offense, it's not as central to the offense as, say, the offensive line was, where you had all 5 guys being kind of like, what's going on here? Where now you can be like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they can, they're important, but also sort of ancillary pieces to what's going on here. They're not as central. So I think they can probably figure something out because, again, think back to 2021. You had a guy in Jeremy Ruckert who was headed off to the NFL. You had a guy in Cade Stover as the number 2 guy who was still transitioning to being a full-time tight end and having that identity. And then you had some other guys hanging around, your Mitch Rossies and you know, like walk-on level guys who were doing some of those fullbackish, H-back, tight end sort of things, helping out. Like it's not necessarily about always at that position having one high level guy who carries the weight. It is something where you do a lot of things with packages. You mix and match, and you know that Ryan Day likes to do that. And one of the reasons he likes to do that is because Chip Kelly likes to do it, and that's who he learned a lot of this from. So I'm very intrigued by what they see in this tight end group and what they then want to do with this tight end group.
Tight end is important because of what we've come to know the Ohio State offense to be under Ryan Day. But also, they've got options. They can do a lot of different things. Just like with Jim Knowles, how we talked about, they can do a million different things and throw out a million different personnel packages. They can do the same thing on offense. And I think there's not a long list of position groups this year where you're not certain what the starters are going to look like, but you at least have an idea formulating already in your head of what it's going to look like, right? Linebacker, even if you're not really sure if it's going to be CJ Hicks or Sonny Styles, it's, hey, this 5-star recruit who might be ready to blow, or this 5-star recruit who already played a bunch of snaps last year, and can he just make the transition? At offensive line, it's kind of the same thing where it's like, okay, Luke Montgomery might be ready to play in year 2. Tegra Shibola might be ready to take off. Maybe Josh Fryer, after a year under his belt, is ready to be more than he was last year. Tight end's probably just the biggest question mark in terms of who's going to be the starter, but then what the depth behind them looks like. But we're going to get a chance to look at that on Saturday when we're in the Woody, 614-350-3315, 2-week free trial, $399 after that. We'll be back in the Woody also on Thursday talking with players. Maybe some of the tight ends will be amongst that group. We'll find that out later this week. So, yeah, get the text, 614-350-3315. All news, all analysis, all everything going to your phone first before anywhere else. For Nathan Baird and for Andrew Gillis, I'm Stephen Means, and that was Buckeye Talk.